Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back studying the Torah portions. This week, we're reading the portion Vayetze, which is from Genesis 28:10 to 32:3. Or if you're reading a Christian translation, it'll be 32:2. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, you can go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll get into discussing.
In Vayetze, we see how Jacob has a prophetic vision in which God establishes the covenant with Abraham to Jacob. Afterwards, Jacob flees to the land of his uncle Laban, where he stays for many years and is provided for by God with wives and children and many possessions, after which he finally returns to the land of Canaan.
So this portion starts out with Jacob fleeing from Esau, as we read in the last chapter. And on his way out from Canaan, he stops at a certain place to sleep for the night. And while he's asleep, he sees a vision from God. In this vision, he sees a ladder going all the way up to heaven, or a staircase in some translations. And up and down this ladder, he sees a bunch of angels or messengers of God just going up and down. And then God stands at the top of the ladder, and he basically renews the covenant that he made with Abraham and then passed down to Isaac. He says, "I am the Lord your God, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac." And he says that I'm going to give you the land on which you lie. So Jacob hasn't left Canaan yet. He's on his way out. But here, while he's still in Canaan, God's like, "I'm giving you the land of Canaan." And he promises, even though you're leaving, I'm going to be with you no matter where you are, and I will bring you back to this land because it's yours. And he also again reiterates that Jacob's descendants will be a blessing to all the families of the earth. So like he already said with Abraham and with Isaac, he's now reiterating that to Jacob, saying this promise to be a blessing to all the families that is going through you. So this is a really interesting vision because not only is God just reaffirming the promise, but also this imagery of the ladder. It's not really discussed like what the implications are of this ladder here. It is mentioned again, though, by the Master Yeshua. In the book of Yohanan, or John, Yeshua is talking to his disciple Nathanael, and he says, "Amen, amen, I say to you, you will see the heaven opened and the messengers or angels of God going up and coming down upon the Son of Man." So the Son of Man is another name for Yeshua. But basically, Yeshua says that the ladder that Jacob saw, that was a picture of Yeshua. And so this vision that Jacob saw, as God's telling him, your seed, it says descendants or offspring in some translations, but the word is seed, your seed is going to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. And God is giving him a picture of what that's going to look like. Because that picture is of Yeshua opening a pathway to God, going up and coming down. Basically, he acts as an intermediary, allowing us to go to God and God to come to us.
Something I find interesting about this vision is that God himself is standing at the top of the ladder.
Mm.
So through the ladder, which is Yeshua, it's almost like that's Jacob can see God through him.
Mm.
No one has ever seen God.
Right.
He's the invisible one. But through Yeshua, you can see him, because if you know Yeshua, then you know the Father.
Right. So this is one of those times where you actually see a pretty clear picture of Yeshua. I mean, it's somewhat vague and it's hard to see, but once you see Yeshua and you can look back, you see that, like Yeshua says, Moses was writing about Yeshua. And it shows that the promise to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob is ultimately fulfilled in Yeshua.
And this vision is evidently the first time that God has spoken to Jacob.
Mm.
And with it, he's confirming the promise to Abraham and Isaac. And so he's basically making himself the God of Jacob. right here, right now.
Yeah.
And so Jacob realizes that, and he's like awestruck and afraid. He says, this place is the house of God.
Right.
And he vows that if God does what he promised he would do just now,
to be faithful to him, to be with him, and to bring him back to the land.
Right. If God does that, then Jacob says that the Lord will be his God.
Mm.
And he will give a tenth of everything he has to God.
Right.
So he's making this vow, this commitment.
Right.
It's very interesting.
It's kind of like a transaction commitment, sort of. God promised this, and Jacob is like, well, if you do this, then I will do this. God's doing it without any conditions. And then Jacob puts conditions on himself, almost.
Right. The covenant that God made with Abraham and confirmed with Isaac was unidirectional. God is promising things to Abraham and to Isaac, and they just believe. And
right. They didn't do anything, and God didn't tell them to do anything except, you know, circumcise.
Yeah, but Jacob's reaction is unique in that he's basically promising back to God.
Yeah.
He's kind of making the covenant two ways, as it were.
Right.
Obviously, if Jacob were to fail in his requirements,
that doesn't mean God would fail in his.
No, but Jacob's just going the extra mile to show his devotion to the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac, and now he wants it to be the God of Jacob as well.
And another thing is that he adds in this concept of giving a tenth to God. This is only the second time we've seen the concept of giving a tenth in Scripture. The first time was with Abraham when he gave a tenth to Melchizedek. So it's just an interesting pattern that we'll then see later again, later in the Torah, when they give a tenth to Levi. It's just an ongoing pattern that you see in the Torah, where you give a tenth to God or to the priest of God.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way of taking what God has blessed you with and giving back to him. The reality is, he deserves 110% of what he gives you, not 10%.
Right. It's the least you can do.
Right.
Another thing that I noticed about this promise that God makes to Jacob is that he promises, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. That language of I will bring you back to this land, it reminded me of promises that God later makes to the nation of Israel, where God basically promises, yes, if Israel is wicked and doesn't keep my commands, I will exile them from this land, but no matter what happens, I won't forget my covenant, I won't finish them off completely, and I will bring them back to this land. And so that promise of faithfulness to the people of Israel starts with Jacob, because this is the first time you see that concept of, yes, you're leaving the promised land, but you will come back. Because with Abraham, he just promised, this is your land. And yes, he did go to Egypt and he came back, but there was no big deal about that. And Isaac stayed in the promised land his whole life. But Jacob, God is promising, yes, you're leaving the promised land. And I know, and I'll be with you when you're not in the promised land. And I'll bring you back to the promised land.
I mean, like we already said, the promise is one way. It doesn't matter how far the people of Israel go. It already says, your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. Isaiah says some things which seem parallel to it to me when he says, fear not, for I am with you. I will bring your offspring from the east, and from the west I will gather you. I will say to the north, give up, and to the south, do not withhold. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the end of the earth. I can't say for sure, but it seems to me like Isaiah's like directly paralleling this here. Because like you said, there is a parallel between Jacob going out and being brought back and all of his descendants going out and being brought back. Mm. The people of Israel have gone in every direction. They are everywhere.
Right.
But that's exactly what God said was going to happen. Mm. And then he said that he would bring them all back.
Right. And then after Jacob sees this vision, he goes and he decides to name the place Bethel, or in Hebrew it would be Beit El, which means house of God, because he says, surely this was God's house and I didn't realize. And he sets up a pillar and he anoints it as basically a monument that God appeared to him there and saying, this is where God is. And this place, Beit El, actually later became a spot where the tabernacle sat. The tabernacle was essentially God's makeshift house before the temple was built in Jerusalem. So God appeared to him here, and Jacob called it the house of God, and then later the house of God actually did sit here.
So after Jacob had gotten up the next morning, he went on his way, he leaves Canaan, and he comes to the east, to the land where Laban lives. Laban being his uncle,
right,
his mother's brother, which is where his parents had told him to go.
To take a wife from his daughters, actually.
Right. That was what they assigned him to do, basically. They said, get out of here, go to your uncle, marry one of his daughters. One of the first people he sees when he gets to that place is one of Laban's daughters, named Rachel. So as soon as he sees her, he's like, yes, I made it. And he goes to Laban, and
it's kind of love at first sight-ish type thing, where he immediately, he's like, I'm going to uncover the well just for her. I'm going to kiss her. I'm going to start crying.
And yeah. Like, well, it's also because she's family. Mm. Laban's father was Abraham's brother. Mm. So there is some pretty close familial connection there, which kind of makes it a little weird that they're getting married. But that's at this time period, there weren't a lot of people on the planet.
And also, basically, marrying within the family is how ethnic groups happened, really.
Right. That's specifically what Abraham wanted to happen to avoid assimilation, to keep the people group distinct.
Right.
So now that Jacob's here, Rachel leads him to Laban. Mm-hmm. And Laban says, hey, it's my family. Come stay with us. I'll take care of you. He's being shown favor. Mm-hmm.
And Jacob starts working for Laban. And Laban's like, well, you can't be working for nothing. What wage do you want?
Jacob says, I'll have your daughter Rachel. Which, I mean, that's exactly what his parents wanted him to do. So it makes sense. But he loved Rachel. Mm-hmm. So he said, I'll work 7 years.
To earn Rachel.
Yeah. And Laban said, all right, sounds good. And so Jacob worked 7 years for a wife.
And it says that for him it only felt like a few days because he loved Rachel so much.
Love is willing to work, do whatever it takes.
Right.
For the people you love. Mm-hmm. And so after 7 years of waiting and working, Jacob says, it's finally time. Laban, I'm ready for my wife. And Laban says, oh, I'll give you a wife.
He's like, here's my daughter. And then next morning, Jacob wakes up and he's like, this is the wrong daughter. You gave me Rachel's sister, Leah.
And Laban did it on purpose.
Yeah, because Leah was older. And so even though Jacob loved Rachel, Laban was like, but Leah's older, so she needs to get married first. And it says that Leah wasn't as beautiful as Rachel was. And Jacob just loved Rachel. And so Jacob's naturally upset when he gets the wrong wife.
But Laban says, not to worry. I have the solution. You're going to love this. I'll give you Rachel, too, if you work for me for another 7 years. So it's messed up. Laban cheated Jacob to marry off his other daughter.
Right.
And now Jacob has two wives, one of which he worked 7 years for, and one of which he has to work 7 years for.
Right. And one of which he didn't want, one of which he definitely wanted. And it just creates all sort of internal strife, and it causes rivalry between sister wives. And it's just totally messed up, and it's basically all Laban's fault.
But Laban gets Jacob to be his worker for another 7 years.
Yeah.
We're going to see Laban is going to try and take as much advantage of Jacob as he can.
And the more that he tries to take advantage of Jacob, the more Laban ends up getting the raw end of the deal. And so this whole portion, you just see over and over again, Laban is not a good guy. We said a few portions ago that it seemed like the house of Rebekah, so that would be Jacob's mother and Laban here and his parents, it seemed like they were a God-fearing house. Laban's not acting very God-fearing here.
Yeah, on the outside, he's like, hey, your family, we take care of my own, and my own work for me. It's very deceitful and disingenuous. And the consequences for Jacob are that he has a wife he loves and a wife he doesn't love.
A wife that he actually hates is what it says.
Yeah, that's what it says, is that Leah was hated. So there's this terrible family dynamic. In fact, Torah will later forbid this.
Exactly.
Polygamy is messed up enough.
Right.
Torah never explicitly condemns it, but it does explicitly
condemn marrying sisters.
Right. Because they'll be rivals. That's what it says. Let me find the verse. It says, "You shall not take a woman as a rival wife to her sister, uncovering her nakedness while her sister is still alive." Marrying sisters just creates this
awful... we'll see in this portion. Because the very first thing is that, for one thing, Leah was just hated because she was the wife that Jacob didn't want. And so Leah is basically... she hopes that by mothering children for Jacob that maybe now Jacob will love me. It's just so tragic and sad. And basically, Rachel couldn't have children for a while. And Leah kept having children. She had four children before Jacob had any other children. And she keeps saying, Adonai has seen my affliction. Maybe now my husband will love me. Adonai heard because I am unloved. Maybe now my husband will be attached to me. And when she has a fourth kid, it's, I will praise Adonai. So Leah is actually, she's continually looking to God and praying, God, please make my husband love me.
Yeah, and it specifically says that God saw that Leah was hated and opened her womb, but Rachel remained barren.
Right.
God is favoring Leah because she is hated. Jacob isn't treating her fairly.
Right.
He has an obligation to both of his wives. A man has an obligation to his wife, and when you have two wives, you have an equal obligation to both of them, but Jacob only loved one of them.
Mm.
And so God is kind of compensating for that by giving Leah children.
Right.
And Leah hopes that that will make Jacob love her, but it doesn't seem to.
And so then, as we move on into chapter 30, basically it becomes a sibling rivalry for who can have the most kids. So after Leah's had four kids, Rachel says, Jacob, give me children or I'm just going to die. And this makes Jacob really upset because he's like, I can't play God. I can't make you not be barren anymore. And so Rachel does the same thing that we saw Sarah do a while back, where she gave her maid or her slave girl, Hagar, to Abraham. In this case, Rachel gives her maid, Bilhah, to Jacob and says, have children vicariously through her for me. And so basically it's like, well, maybe my maid will outbirth my sister. And so then Leah's like, well, then start having children through my maid as well. So now Jacob has four wives.
But only two of them are wives, and two of them are...
like concubines?
Concubine type. To give children as surrogates, kind of-ish, except that they're...
It's just so messed up. And they just keep, like, having children kind of back and forth, and... Rachel's like, aha, I beat my sister. And Leah's like...
The rivalry is crazy.
Mm.
And so messed up. But through it all, one thing is being created, which is children. Lots and lots,
lots of children.
Lots of children. 12 sons. Well, 11
sons.
Well,
we haven't gotten to the 12th son yet, but we have gotten a daughter. So Jacob does have 12 children so far.
Through all these children... Jacob's going to have the 12 tribes of Israel.
Right.
This is
how God is building the nation.
Yeah.
And again, it shows the pattern. Even when people are doing messed up things, God is still working through that to achieve his ends.
So after the birth of Jacob's son, Joseph, Jacob's 7 years are up that Laban required him to work for a second wife.
Right.
So Jacob comes to Laban and says, my time's up. I've got wives, I've got children. Let me go home to my own country.
Mm.
And Laban says, wait, no, please don't go. God has blessed me because of you. So I want you to stay. Go ahead and pick your wages. I want you to stay. And Jacob says, okay, fine, if you insist. But here's my wages. I'm going to keep pasturing your flock, because that's the work Jacob's been doing for these 14 years.
Right, he's been basically
years.
Shepherding.
Yeah, he's been shepherding the flock. And he says, okay, I'll keep doing it, but now my wages are going to be, I'm going to take all the speckled and spotted lambs and goats
right.
to be my own flock.
And then all of the white ones you get to keep. Those will be your flock.
Right. So... Jacob is able to build his own flock this way, but he's also saying it's an easy way for Laban to make sure he's not being cheated.
Right, because he can just look at the sheep and say, that one's Jacob's, that one's mine.
Right. So this arrangement that Jacob's making, it makes it very, very hard for Jacob to possibly cheat Laban. So Jacob is basically... guaranteeing his honesty to Laban.
Right.
And Laban says, that's a good deal. Let's do it. But then he takes all the speckled and spotted sheep that should belong to Jacob out of his flock and separates them 3 days' journey distance so that none of those sheep can reach the flock that Jacob's left to pasture. So Jacob has said, I'm going to go through your flock and any black sheep that I find and speckled goats that I find are going to be mine. But Laban purposely took all of them out.
That's crazy. I hadn't realized that. I'd misread which he was which.
Yeah.
So Laban went ahead and removed all the sheep that would be Jacob's. And then when Jacob got to it, there were no sheep left for him.
Right. So Laban is
cheating Jacob. Laban is an awful dude.
Yes. Laban is totally cheating Jacob. But Jacob's solution is... he takes some sticks and he peels them and he puts them in the water troughs where the flock will come to drink. And it doesn't say exactly what this does, and it seems to imply some divine intervention a little later.
Right.
But basically, these white flocks that have no speckles or spots bring forth striped and speckled and spotted young.
Right.
So all the young being produced by Laban's flock belong to Jacob.
Right.
And so all of Laban's possessions are slowly shifting over to Jacob.
Right. Except that basically it seems like these sticks are somehow encouraging the flocks to mate. Mm-hmm. And so whenever the strong sheep and goats were there getting watered, he would put in the sticks that they would mate and then bring forth young for Jacob to have. But when it was the weak sheep and goats, he would take out the sticks. That way they wouldn't mate, and he wouldn't get any of those. So basically, all he was basically slowly separating things such that all the weak ones ended up in Laban's possession, and all the strong ones ended up in Jacob's possession, and also Jacob ended up with a lot of them. So basically, Jacob is kind of getting back at Laban, whether he's doing that of his own accord or whether that's God actually intervening. It's a little bit confusing exactly how this happened. But whatever Laban tries to do to take advantage of Jacob, it ends up causing Jacob's increase. Jacob hasn't done anything wrong to Laban. Everything that he did here was perfectly legal within the confines of the agreement that they had made. But God is still blessing Jacob. Like God said to Jacob, he would always be with him no matter where he was.
And while Jacob is still operating within the confines of the agreement, Laban keeps altering the deal.
Pray I don't alter it further.
Jacob says that Laban cheated him and changed his wages 10 times.
Over the course of 6 years.
Over the course of 6 years, he would say, just the spotted are going to be your wages. And then the whole flock would have spotted young. So then he said, never mind, forget that. Only the striped are going to be your wages.
And then they would all be striped. So it does seem like God, and it says that God gave him a vision, and when he saw in the vision that all the young were spotted and striped and speckled and black and all that. And so basically it does seem like God is physically intervening here and making sure that Jacob is getting what he needs.
It says God has taken away the livestock of Laban and given them to Jacob. Mm. And Laban kept trying to cheat Jacob, but God did not permit him to harm Jacob. That's what it says. Mm. So, yes, God is making sure that even as Laban keeps altering the deal, all of the strong sheep being born
are going to Jacob.
And so Jacob's just getting richer and richer.
Right.
And Laban's losing his wealth. And like we saw with Isaac, when he got prosperous, the Philistines hated him and started to stop his wells.
And told him to leave.
And told him to leave. When Jacob gets this prosperous, Laban, who's his own family and who was showing him favor at the beginning.
It says now, his countenance changed and Jacob was like, oh boy, he's getting mad. So God says, it's time for you to go back home.
Yeah, God tells Jacob that it's time to go. Mm. But Jacob is afraid of Laban. Mm. And so he thinks, if I try to leave, Laban might take my wives away and leave me without anything. So he says, I've got to go now. I've got to go in the secret. Mm. So he tells his wives what they're going to do. Mm. And his wives say, okay, whatever God says, let's do it. Mm. Let's go. So when Jacob fled, it took 3 days for Laban to find out. Mm. Which I find interesting because Laban had intentionally put 3 days between himself and Jacob to keep the flocks apart.
Right.
To cheat Jacob. Mm. And now it's taking 3 days for Laban to figure out, Jacob's gone.
And it gives Jacob a 3 days head start. So again, what Laban did to mess up Jacob actually helped Jacob.
Although, Laban immediately set out to pursue and eventually did overtake. Mm-hmm. But before he overtook, God showed up to Laban by night. Mm. And what God said to Laban was, don't say anything to Jacob, good or bad. Mm. It's a very interesting phrasing. It reminds me of a few portions ago what Laban said when asked if Isaac could marry his sister. Mm. He said, the thing has come from Adonai. We cannot speak to you bad or good.
Right. Basically meaning it doesn't matter what I want. I can't say anything about this either way. It just needs to be this way. Because that's what God wants.
And now that's what God's saying to Laban. You can't do anything about this. This is the way I want it to be. Don't try to stop it. And so Laban heeds the warning. When he gets to Jacob, he says, why did you do this? You ran away without telling me.
I didn't even get to say goodbye.
And I could hurt you right now.
But God came to me in a dream and said I'm not allowed to, so I won't.
Right.
But going back a little, before Jacob actually left Laban, it says that Rachel kind of, she decided that before they leave, she needs to go and take her father's idols.
Yeah. It's really weird. It's without, Jacob doesn't know she did it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not told why she did it.
Well, presumably the only reason to have an idol is to worship it. I can't think of any other possible reason to have an idol. But this is telling, though, because not only does it say that Rachel is an idolater, but it says that Laban was an idolater. These were
right.
Laban's household gods. This was not actually a purely God-fearing family. I mean, Leah, it says she kept looking to God and such, but Rachel, the whole time, she was being vindictive and she was wanting, basically was only like, I want God to help me get over my sister.
And like the indication is that Laban is at least somewhat God-fearing. I mean, when he refers to God as the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father.
Right.
Nahor is Laban's grandfather.
Right.
Basically, he sees
that they have the same God.
Yeah, he basically thinks the God of Terah, who's the father of both Abraham and Nahor, is
their common God.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we'll see later in the Torah, after the Israelis are set free from Egypt, they're at the foot of Sinai, they make a golden calf, and they say, this is Adonai, who brought you out of Egypt.
Right.
You can recognize and you can pray to God and then say, but God is an idol.
Yeah.
Which seemingly could be what Laban and Rachel are doing.
Possibly.
Possibly. But whatever the case, Laban had idols and Rachel wanted them. And then Rachel lied to keep them.
The whole thing is messed up. We've got idolatry and stealing and lying. But Jacob isn't involved in any of that.
Right.
Jacob didn't know Rachel took it. When Laban accused it of being taken,
Jacob flatly denied it.
Yeah, and he said, but go ahead, check. If it's there,
kill the person who has
it. Will die. But Laban didn't find it. It's a very weird story, but bottom line is Rachel and Laban were both messed up. But Rachel didn't get in trouble. For whatever that's worth, nothing that belonged to Jacob was harmed. And so Jacob's angry at Laban, Laban's angry at Jacob. Both of them are saying, you cheated me. No, you cheated me. You're the one who ran away from me. You're the one who took my daughter. You're the one who's trying to take my wife. Despite all their disputing, Laban says, what can I do? God told me not to interfere. Let's make a covenant and go our separate ways.
Right.
And so they make a covenant and set up a pillar, which they say is to be a witness.
A heap. This heap is a witness between you and me this day.
And Laban basically says the covenant and the witness is that Laban's going to stay on one side of the heap. And Jacob's going to stay on the other side.
And neither one is going to cross over to harm the other. Basically,
right.
it's a mutual non-aggression pact, really.
Kind of. And then the other part of it is Laban says, do not
harm my daughters
or take wives besides my daughters. If you do, God is witness. So that's the covenant. Laban's saying, don't take any other wives, treat my daughters well. And stay over there and don't come back. And Jacob says, all right, fair enough. You stay over there and don't come after me.
Right.
So that's their covenant. Laban kisses his grandchildren and daughters. And then he goes home.
Yeah.
And Jacob and Laban will never meet again.
And good riddance.
So big takeaway, show favor and be fair to others. Mm. Because when people are cheated, like Jacob, or if they're hated, like Leah, God shows favor to them. And so I think that's also the attitude that we should have. Mm. But if we're like Laban, where we cheat others, things are only going to get worse for us, not better. Mm. Because God prepares a reward for the poor and the meek and the humble.
That wraps up the portion of Vayetzeh. Next week we'll be discussing the portion of Vayishlach, so make sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell to keep updated on our new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.